Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
When you're ready to let go of your engagement ring, the experts at Worthy can help you turn it into cash fast and risk-free. They do all the work and their competitive auctions get you the best deal possible.
And the very best part about Worthy is that you are in charge of what happens to your jewelry. You set the reserve price, you approve the winning bid, and then you get paid. And if your item doesn't sell for the price that you want, guess what? Worthy sends it back to you at no cost, fully insured.
Over 60,000 people have already sold with Worthy, and they have 2,500 five-star reviews on Trustpilot.
So go visit worthy.com/notsuck and get an extra $100 when your jewelry sells for over $1,500. That's worthy.com/notsuck.
Oh my God. It is such a Monday around here. Morgan, I cannot tell you. Are you feeling it or is it just me?
Well, you know that I couldn't even start my computer just to even record this. So it keeps going. It's like the Monday that will never end.
Seriously, what do you think the best part was when you texted me that your computer was being a duck?
Oh, autocorrect. It's probably good that I have autocorrect on my phone because some of the things I say probably would be so inappropriate.
I think what was nice about nesting for us, and I think for a lot of people though, is that the kids were not causing a lot of stress. It was just the divorce that was causing stress.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
It's one of those days, and I was just talking about this on Instagram, but even like my sensory issues are on high alert. Like the way that people are talking today is making me insane. Like I just want to walk around telling everybody to shut the fuck up.
Ooh, like everyone, what are those?
I'm just having a day, and we can't blame it on my cycle. Because I ain't got no cycle now.
I thought you were going to say the weather, but no, you went right for the cycle.
You can't blame it on the uterus because there ain't no uterus. Mm. And I think that's another reason why I'm cranky, actually, because while the rest of the world was spring breaking and having fun, I was having a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
So,
but let's be real. It's not like you would want to go anywhere anyway because you are adverse to vacations.
There you go. I know it's so true, but I would have done something else. I mean, okay, yes, I don't enjoy travel necessarily, but I also don't enjoy hysterectomies. So damned if you do, damned if you don't. The other thing that I'll say really quickly before I get into obsessed is I've had my kids for many days in a row right now because it's the Jewish holiday of Passover. And I got my kids for the second night of Passover. And that happened to back right up to my stretch of like long parenting time. Mm-hmm. I've had them for like 6 days in a row. And I'm feeling it. And that's so odd because, you know, you think like, well, most people have their kids every single day, but there's something like you feel it differently when it's just you. When yes. there's no one else to help out with the stuff. And mm-hmm. and it's also like a holiday. And with Passover comes all these dietary restrictions, which means the kids are in moods because they can't eat all the stuff they normally eat. And I don't know, it's just been, it is weird. And it's been a day and it's been a week and ugh.
Well, good news. Tomorrow is another day.
Tomorrow is another day. And mm-hmm. I've got good news on top of that.
Good.
There is something keeping me alive right now. Something that I am obsessed with.
I love this segment because it brings about things that we didn't even know we needed.
Things that we're literally obsessed with. It's TV related.
Oh, it's probably like for you, maybe like a Housewives series of some sort.
No, close, but no cigar. Mm. And Netflix show. A Netflix show that has to do with love.
Ooh. I'm so bad with TV.
And not being able to see love.
Love is Blind.
There you go.
I've watched a few of those. I thought those were really interesting.
So season 4 of Love is Blind is deep in the midst right now. And I'm into it. And it's giving me meaning, giving
the
me
breather you need.
It is. I'm enjoying it. For those of you who are also listening right now and watching Love is Blind, I'm sure you're having that like, oh yeah, because it's getting good. There's some meaty stuff going on. We've already had one big breakup. I think there are some couples this season that are just the oddest pairings, and it's cringy to watch them and also intriguing. And I love it. And I think I recommend if you're going through a divorce and you need something to zone out to, I don't feel like it's a show where you're going to get real emotional and feel like, oh, my marriage dissolved and they're falling in love in a pod. It's not like that. It's kind of just a spectacle. I mean, did you find it romantic with the episodes that you watched?
I mean, no, I will say that I find it, first of all, how could it be romantic when you're in a pod, right?
Right.
Like, it's so weird. Yeah. But what I do find is just the interesting, you know, the interesting things that come from it is the connections, yeah, all about their personalities, what they're sharing. I mean, I'm all for it. So, but then it just kind of gets more cringe and cringe, and it's just like, oh, it's nails on a chalkboard. But I haven't seen it in quite some time, but I can see why you
have these arguments, right? And they're crying.
An argument with like somebody on the other side of a wall.
Well, no, they're having arguments post wall, like after, you know, they get engaged and now they're living together. And then, I mean, they're telling their families, like, this is the love of my life. And the families are like, you just met him. You've been together for a week. And they're like, he is the love of my life, mom. And I'm like, no, you don't even know. Like, and they, it's just like, and then they meet the best friends, and the best friends are all like, mm-hmm, girl, he is not the one for you. You don't even know his middle name. And they're like, but it doesn't matter because he is the love of my life.
You know what I'm like kind of laughing at right now is it's bringing you out of your mood. I can see your face changing. Thank just you. Talking because, you know, I'm obviously, that's my training, is to watch people's face and how they're reacting. I mean, you are have just done a 180 in like less than 10 minutes.
Love is Blind, people, saving lives, saving moods, saving lives. It is it makes me want to remain in my zone, in my house, in front of my TV at all times. And speaking of remaining in your house, the episode that we're doing today It's an interesting topic. Buckle up, put your safety belt on, double your layers, because this is something that, I don't know, can we say this is controversial? I mean,
yes, yeah, you're going right? to need your big boy pants for this one.
Yeah, we're talking about a topic called nesting, and it's not what you think. It's interesting. I am very undecided on how I feel about it. We're talking to a nesting expert who has nested herself, I believe, for 8 years, and she wrote a book about it. Her name is Beth, and we're going to hear all about it, and we're going to open your world and your mind and your eyes to what is the deal with nesting.
And I have a lot to say on that legally and what my experience is, but I'm curious to see Beth's experience. And little known fact, before we bring her on, Beth was on Good Morning America with her husband talking, or I should say ex-husband, talking about their nesting situation. So without further ado, let's hear it for Beth.
Okay, guys, have you heard of nesting? And no, we're not talking about that phase where you want to decorate your nursery four different ways before the baby finally comes.
So according to the internet, or interwebs, however you may say it, we Googled what nesting means, because I know what nesting means because I talk about it all the time. But this is what it says online. It says it's an arrangement where your children remain in the family home and the parents rotate on and off duty according to an agreed upon schedule. So the on-duty parent stays in the home with the children, and the off-duty parent usually leaves the home to stay elsewhere. That's what it means.
Okay, so here to dig deeper with us on the topic of nesting is Beth Behrendt. Beth is the founder of FamilyNesting.org and also the author of Nesting After Divorce, which by the time this episode airs, will be officially released, which is very exciting. So Beth, hey, thank you so much for being here with us tonight, and welcome to How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm very excited to talk about my story and other stories I know about nesting families, and hopefully give some people some inspiration to consider it for themselves.
All right.
So Beth, when I think of nesting, if I take my legal cap off and I think of nesting, I'm thinking this cozy, comfortable, snuggly area of this nest. And then you kind of rip the Band-Aid off and you're like, oh my gosh, it's one parent in and one parent out. So you just heard what I read because I found that on the internet. So as far as the definition of nesting is concerned, give us your definition and where this word actually comes from.
Okay, well, it comes from, you know, the longer word bird nesting. And it's still used that way. Sometimes you can Google it and get some hits with that term. But I think it's become more common. People are just shortening it to nesting. And of course, that references how the baby birds stay in the comforting, pleasant nest, and the mommy and daddy bird take turns flying in and out to take care of them. So it's, you know, basically that, except for humans instead of birds.
Okay. And you are a nester. Is that what we call people who nest? I don't even know.
Yes.
A nester, that's the noun. Okay. Now, how long have you been, have you done this? Are you still doing this?
We are still doing it, and we have just started year 9.
Whoa. I was just looking at you because our listeners can't see you, but you're on Zoom. And you're in a bedroom. I think there's a cat or an animal,
a dog
behind you. And I was just thinking to myself, is she nesting? Is this her week or her time in the house?
I am at the nest. And when I'm at the nest, we have a basement bedroom and bathroom. And so I just have converted it into my space. And so when I'm here, I can come down here and, you know, get some privacy. The kids know if the door is closed, but the dog got in. But anyway, hopefully that won't be too much of a distraction. And so yeah, this is my space in the house, in the nest.
Okay, perfect. All right. So I have some questions.
Well, people can't see it.
No one can see it, just us.
Okay. I mean, I like it.
So I have a lot of questions, but for our listeners, I'm putting my legal hat back on. And what I want to say before I get into the questions is, you know, I've seen nesting legally. I will tell you where I am. The courts are very hesitant. I don't think a court, I've ever seen a court order nesting if you do not agree to it. And we will get into that. And I will say that it takes a very unique couple in my experience to make nesting work. And as a divorce lawyer, I very rarely would recommend nesting as a solution. It takes a very unique couple to make it work. That's why I think it's so interesting that we have Beth on today to talk about her experience. But I do talk about it a lot with people because people want to know what it is and whether it could work for them. And the point of our podcast, and Andrea and my view, has always been give out the information. What works for somebody may not work for you. So we just want to give out as much information as possible and you make your own decision. So that said, that was my legal disclaimer that I put on it. Tell us, Beth, what types of couples, in your opinion, would be good candidates for nesting and the types of couples maybe who would not be good candidates?
Yeah, if I can react to what you were saying first from your legal perspective, that's actually rather surprising to me. And then I'll get into my specific thoughts that you think it's kind of uncommon, which I guess it is. I think that what I found as I started this family nesting group, this private group, which now has about 500 members.
That's great.
That's a lot of people who most of them are actually doing nesting. And so I do think a lot of, I don't know numbers, but my impression is that a number of people get into it, do it outside of the sort of standard divorce process. It's something they kind of just arrange between the two of them. And some of them wait a while to even get divorced, but they consider their marriage over and take this approach. So that's one approach to it. But that was just a reaction to what you had said, because I do want people to just consider it. You know, I think there are a lot of couples that we're so used to just going into, this is what divorce means. We split everything. We never talk to each other again if we can help it. And you know, in some cases that maybe is the best thing to do, but I think in a lot of cases, especially when there are children involved, that's not the best approach. So anyway, sorry for that aside, but then I'll get back to your question. I think my feeling is though that there are some couples who definitely should not nest, and that would be things like cases of, you know, abuse, of course, physical or extreme emotional abuse, or if there's problems with addiction or like a pathological liar, you know, somebody you just couldn't trust. And also if the children don't feel comfortable staying with one parent, then you of course don't want to be forcing them into a situation that they're not comfortable with. And so those are kind of the things that I think are definite no's. What I would encourage people to think about, because I know myself, when you're in the heat of divorce, you know, and probably most people consider their divorce to be pretty contentious. And it's hard to imagine that you could get to a cooperative place like this with your co-parent. But I know a number of couples who managed to get past it. You know, they set up really strict boundaries so that they really didn't overlap in the house much, that they had, you know, written guidelines that were very specific to detail things about parenting, just because they thought it was worth going into that effort to keep the kids in the consistent environment. But yes, overall, I think it is ideally for people who can trust each other, who do understand that the other person is a good parent on their own, and who know that their children are happy with either parent, and that that parent can step up into the parenting responsibilities, even if they haven't been perhaps doing as much in more traditional roles before the divorce.
Thank you, Beth. So I know Andrea has a question, but I just need one clarification. Can you share with our listeners kind of what your nesting schedule looks like personally so they can kind of wrap their heads around that?
Yeah, I will start by telling you how it was originally, because we've just recently changed quite a bit. But for a number of years, we had Wednesday mornings through Saturday evening. So I would come into the house Wednesday morning, get the kids off to school, and Bill would leave the house, you know, as I was coming in. And then he would come back in Saturday evening and be with the kids until Tuesday morning. And the first couple of years that we did it, we actually, I use the word shared. We shared an apartment, but we were never in it at the same time. You know, the other person was at the house when that person was in the apartment. So we did that schedule for a long, long time. But after a while, Bill started traveling a lot for work. And so it didn't make sense for him to be in an apartment and the house and travel for work. So he switched to just traveling or then doing parenting time. And so then our schedule started to fluctuate based on what his work schedule was. And it's kind of been that way for a number of years. And then of course, COVID threw a wrench in everything and he stopped traveling. And he has remarried and spends time with his wife now when he's not in the house.
So for clarification purposes, so originally you guys had your apartment or let's just call it home base. You had home base.
Yeah.
And then you had a side apartment that you were also sharing and that worked for a while. But then he, you know, is traveling and gets married. I mean, there's another person in the picture. So now you have the main home base with him that you share. You have your own apartment. And then he also has his own space with his new wife. Is that accurate?
Correct. So when he's not in the nest, he goes to her house.
Okay. So her house. But you effectively have now three places between the two of you.
Yes, though. Yes, I guess.
Okay.
She, you know, was her house beforehand, and
okay.
And so yes, though now he's we're kind of in a transition stage because he's married and he's planning to spend a little bit more time there. Plus, we have a couple kids in college now, and so I am actually moving into the nest full time, and I'm afraid this is going to confuse everybody, but this is just in the past few months. I just want to be honest about what's going on.
Yeah.
So now I have let my apartment go. I'm in the nest. And when I'm not in the nest, I go to my fiance's house. And so, yeah, we're a big crazy sounding group of people, but,
okay.
It's
okay.
Taken us a long time to get here, but it's really lovely.
Let's back up for a minute because I don't want to kind of muddy everyone's brain with all of these details of what life will look like years after doing this. So let's just everyone ignore everything that you just heard. Let's back up for a second. You're starting out. Now, I want a few things. Number one, if you could just rattle off 2 to 3 benefits of nesting. Why would somebody want to do this?
Yeah, well, I'm actually going to start with the one that might surprise people. A lot of people are drawn to it is because it's cheaper than setting up 2 full-sized homes to house kids. You know, in our case, we have 3 kids. And so for us, we really were drawn to it initially because it was partly for the financial benefits, but it was an easy way just to, you know, rent this small apartment, kind of keep costs, you know, not increasing much at all. And the kids never came to the apartment, so I didn't have anything there for them. But the main one is the consistency for the kids, especially as you're going through divorce, that they stay in the same home. They don't have to trek their stuff back and forth, keep track of it. Their friends always know where they are.
Okay.
With their dog. It's just a comforting thing for children. And a lot of people, I think, do it sort of as a transitional thing to more traditional 2 household, just to ease the kids into that next stage.
Okay, so that's an interesting part that I was thinking about, that using this as a technique to help your family adjust for what will be more long-term. However, we were just talking about how the actual divorce process can be really contentious and you're not necessarily getting along, right? Because you're arguing about money and all these other things. So I would like to know, Was the nesting experience more challenging while you were getting divorced than it is now? And along with that, what were some challenges that you had? What happened to you that you were unexpectedly surprised and pleased? And then what were the parts that you were like, oh shit,
this is hard.
Yeah, I think the you're right. There were just the emotional challenges of getting divorced. And so we had to work very hard and kind of set some strict rules for ourselves about, you know, not discussing the divorce in the nest or in front of the kids. And we would kind of go to this coffee shop that was like a neutral space and try and just keep it very separate from when we were, you know, when either of us was with the kids. We'd wait till they were in school or something like that.
Which is a healthy thing to do regardless of if you're nesting or not, right? Like keep this stuff out of the house and out of, I was gonna say earsight, out of earshot of the kids. So yes. Okay. What else?
Yeah. So that was challenging for sure. And it was also challenging because we had had a pretty traditional, what is the word? Chores were divided in a pretty traditional way in my household before we divorced. And so I worked part-time, freelancing, had a lot of free time. Bill had the traditional, you know, 9-to-5 job, traveling a ton. So I handled, you know, pretty much anything kid or household related. So there was a steep learning curve for him when we stepped into this. And he will tell you, and I think I have it as a story in the book, that besides the divorce, the hardest thing for him was staying on top of all the laundry of 3 kids. Like that was just super stressful for him. You know, he's like, that's the thing that still comes to mind as the most stressful thing was, you know, at the end of the day, like we need our white shirts for school tomorrow. And, you know,
I'm like, buddy, welcome to my life.
Yeah, you know, and they were young then, you know, so they weren't very helpful yet themselves. And so it was a lot for him, and it was hard for me to give up the control of doing all that stuff. So that, you know, took some time for us to hit our stride with that, for sure. But I do think that then that was really great for him in the long run, not just the laundry aspect, but the being more engaged in what homework is due this week, you know. Oh, there is a doctor's appointment, you know, maybe he would go to the doctor's appointment if I couldn't do it. And it just really, he will say he feels it made him a much better parent because he was kind of forced to do this stuff that he hadn't done before. And it was good for me professionally because it gave me a complete break from being a mom to focus on work. Because I wasn't even in the house, you know, I couldn't do laundry. I didn't need to grocery shop for them. I was not a mom for like 4 days a week, you know, if you're ever not a mom, but you know what I mean? Like there wasn't the constant sense of what had to be done. It was nice to get.
So if you were one of my clients, I mean, I'm hearing pretty much a fantastic relationship with your ex. I'm hearing respect. I'm hearing abiding by, you know, ground rules, you guys, and boundaries that you have set. And just a level of communication that most couples do not have. So if you were my client, I think I would be open to a nesting scenario. If you came to me and said, this is what I really want to do, I think I would be open to trying it. Most clients that I see don't have that. And some of the risks and concerns I have is, you know, nesting sounds lovely if you can make it work, because I love that you're saving money. I love that the kids are not moving houses, et cetera. Those are all positives in my mind. But then if I talk about the negatives that I've seen, some of the negatives that I see are, you know, you've got 2 people who are divorced and trying to move on, and there's really no finality, like starting over, getting your own true space, that the kids know your own true space, that, you know, maybe you feel comfortable having a significant other in your new space, that kind of thing. There's really not that. The other thing that I've seen is a lot of snooping from the other side. So, you know, couples like you with the respect, I mean, you probably don't have those issues. And if you do, I'd be surprised, right? You're shaking your head. No, you don't. But most couples do. I mean, another thing that comes to my mind, which is just so ridiculous, it's like the little piddly things that just drive people nuts. So, you know, if it's my day to come back to the nesting, you're to the nest, I come back and the house is a mess or not the way that I would keep it. You know, maybe there's like half a jug of milk and like the groceries are empty in the fridge. And you're just like, everything is so annoying. And then lastly, I'm just going to say one other thing that I'm thinking of is you've got a joint asset there that you guys are both, you know, in living in, and things break. Everybody knows that, you know, if you have a house or a condo or an apartment, it doesn't matter. There's things that break that need to be repaired. So there's things constant happening with this joint asset. So, you know, it's really tricky in my mind to keep couples in there. But then I see you, and you are a very unique couple. Did you have any of those pitfalls or any of those communication problems with the learning curve of your nesting schedule?
Well, yeah, all of them, I would say. especially really early on, you know, when those emotions are hot. And so it's hard for me because I want to encourage people to do it, but I, of course there are challenges. And of course there are times where, you know, I would be so mad because he didn't come in the house when he said he was gonna be there at 4 and he wasn't, you know, and that was, if it had been a pattern for 3 weeks in a row, you know, it was, I thought my head was going to explode. And yeah,
he has those. Even if you weren't nesting, you would run into that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Totally.
You just have to deal with, like, I hate how, you know, whatever. He leaves his shoes all over the hallway and I still have to deal with that, even though I'm divorced. You know? And so, and yeah, I had to be pretty, I mean, not that I've heard some awful stories about things that people have done about spying on each other, even if they aren't nesting, but there was sort of you had to be very sensitive to, like, if this is something important, you know, like something with my attorney, like I took it back and I took it with me on my, mm-hmm. I didn't leave a box of stuff at the house, you know, I took it with me. Not that I don't think he, you know, would intentionally go looking, but I didn't want that temptation to be there of, you know, stuff that.
Was there ever a time when you were tempted? Was there ever a time when you saw something and you're like, I kind of want to
look at that,
but I'm not going to do it? Like, were you ever
peeking that drawer?
Is he?
Yeah. And you know what? In a way, that may be why I was a little extra cautious about it, because he was, I guess, much more kind of casual about his stuff. And I could feel myself being like, I know that stuff on his desk is for, you know, but I'm not going to look, like, I do not want to go there. So I think that's why I was a little bit like, I'm not even going to leave that temptation for him, because it might be not. But yeah,
it's like a real adult. You really do. I mean, I applaud your boundaries with yourself.
You get an award. You're getting an award for sure.
I feel like we have so many listeners who are like, I'm out. I'd go through his stuff. I'd be snooping, because I feel like it. I think that is very tempting, but I think that it comes back to, you had your priorities like so in line. Like, you knew, I committed to doing this because we have agreed that this is the right thing for our family and our children. And maybe you also knew, damn it, I'm going to be writing a book about this one day. So I got to make sure I am a good example.
I got to get on Good Morning America. So yeah. I'm going to write that book. I'm going to get my ex-husband on board and we're going on the road.
Wow. I'm a good planner, but I don't think I needed that kind of planning. Gosh. Yeah. And you know what? I'm sure if you had told me then, I'd be sitting here 9 years later still doing it. I mean,
right. Still in your basement bedroom.
Yeah, I'm still in my little bedroom. When we started in, we did agree, like, we're going to try for a year, you know, unless everything just goes up. But the goal was a year, because we'd rented the apartment for a year, and we'll just, like, in 6 months kind of reassess. And so as we got to that point and, you know, started getting through the hurdles and emotions calming down and stuff, that then it was easier to be like, well, let's do it a little bit longer. It's great for the kids. You know, they're doing really well. And, you know, sometimes it's a pain for us or stress, but is it worth uprooting their lives?
Right.
It's a hassle for us.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to say is in my cases, there are, and I don't want my listeners to think that I'm totally against it. I'm the creative type of lawyer that whatever works for the family, as long as I think it can truly work, I'm all for it. But sometimes when I am all for nesting, it's a temporary solution in some of my cases. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of people unfortunately, a lot of families, there's really high tensions during a divorce, and a lot of times things escalate quickly in the house. And the worst thing I want for any divorce situation is for the children to witness anything. So if at times things are escalating and there's not a ton of financial means, sometimes what I do recommend at times is, let's just do a temporary schedule. Let's get you guys out of each other's hair. You will rotate in and out for a while, but this is going to bring the tensions down and the stress level for the kids down. So that's one of the ways legally that I can separate people creatively and keep costs down. But one of the things I wanted to circle back with you on, Beth, is tell us some of the rules that you and your husband agreed upon, the ground rules, because I think some people are thinking to myself, or I'm thinking to myself, how the hell does this work? What are these golden rules that you pulled out of thin air that like make it work? And are they like taped to your refrigerator? What, where are these things?
I do. I outline them quite a bit in the book. So I'm trying to remember kind of with us specifically. And yeah, it basically was on the refrigerator, and it was a document that we, you know, wrote together, like Wednesday morning when I come in, you know, there's food for breakfast. The laundry is done. You know, if you're scheduling appointments for the kids, schedule them only on your time. If at all possible, you know, notify the other parent of any, like we'd have a list of like, here's the homework side of the piece of paper. Here's the house stuff, you know, like the sink is dripping. Should I call the plumber? And this was early on when we really, like we weren't talking to each other in the nest. We would just come in and out. So we had so much stuff in writing. And I mean, it probably seemed crazy, but we're both kind of like to-do list type of people. And so it was just, it was always like, you'd come into this long to-do list. And then
I'm laughing because I'm like looking at Andrea and I'm thinking, Andrea, if you were nesting with your ex-husband and you came in on Wednesday morning and there was like a laundry list of things that you had to accomplish, how would that go with you? She's silent.
Well, I mean, let me clarify. You know, not so much like you have to vacuum or you, it was like, Jack has to bring his soccer ball on when, you know, there's a drum lesson Thursday. The electrician's coming Friday. It was more like a...
Let me say that. I think that, again, you have to have two people who are on the same wavelength here. And to what you just said, Beth, you're not, it's not like a honey-do list, right? Because those days are fucking behind you. This is a things like what you said. Jack needs to have his, you know, soccer stuff together and then make sure that Allison has this ready to go. It's not, you didn't do this and you didn't do that, right? Because that's just going to lead to like contention and arguing. And that's, you know, that is a no-no. That is a nest no-no. I think we need to have a list of nest no-nos.
Nest no-nos. I love it.
I want to know something else. I want to talk about the book for a bit.
Yes.
In a book that you wrote, you interview five families, which I think is really interesting because we all know every divorce is different. Every family is different, right? So you could not just write a book about nesting after divorce, having it be just from your perspective, right? And being like, this is what I did. It's going to work for you. Do it. I love that you took the responsibility of talking to five different families. And I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, that they all had very different experiences. What did that look like?
Well, it was really, it was fascinating to me. And I met them by different ways. A couple of them had connected with me personally through the Facebook group. So I had a connection that way. A couple of people, I wrote a New York Times article. That was the first thing I wrote after we'd been doing it about three years. And a few people reached out at that point just with questions. And we kind of kept in touch. And so when it came time to do the book, I thought the same thing. It's like, well, you know, my story is my story, but every family is so different. And so I really want to show what other people are doing. And I learned so much from talking to them, just stuff I hadn't even thought of. Kind of just throw some random things out that are coming to my mind. Like that was the first time I learned that people don't get divorced right away, that they, you know, considered their marriages ended, but they nested for like 5 or 6 years, dated other people, and then, you know, took their time before they decided.
Before they even started the process.
Yeah, which totally surprised me because to me, it was very, I think, necessary for the end of our relationship that we were clearly divorced. Like this is, you know, this, but they were both in the same mindset. And so, you know, it worked for those couples. So I found that interesting. There's one family that actually ended up moving to a different condo. They live in Toronto. And so they ended up not staying in the same home because it didn't make sense with where their girls were living. And so they kind of started a new place as the nest, and then each went to their significant others.
Oh.
Into this nest. So I thought that was interesting. So, you know, it wasn't so much the staying in the family home, but it was definitely, you know, keeping the kids in one place.
I think it's interesting too, because I think some of the downfalls with nesting is people think that they can't move on or can't date or find somebody else. But here you are, you have a fiance, your ex-husband is now remarried. I mean, so it's possible. And you guys are effectively living in, you know, the main nest, and then you had this side apartment. So it's possible that this can happen. So I know that we're going to have people listening to this being like, you know what, this could be right for us, which is great. So you mentioned that you have a Facebook group with 500 members in it. So if someone's looking for more guidance or maybe just wants community around nesting, what do they do? Where do they go?
You can just search for the phrase family nesting on Facebook. And since it's a private group, then I get a notification that you want to be invited, and then I'll invite you. So I think it's helpful for people because then, you know, other people, their friends or whatever, can't see that that's a group they belong to. So if they're just exploring the idea, it's a great place to come. People are so helpful. And every day I'm like, oh, I never thought of doing it that way. Or, oh, that's cool, they're doing that.
That's awesome. I mean, Andrea, I think we have a private Facebook group as well, correct? So now we could probably link with Beth's private Facebook group. It'd be such a great thing for our listener. Yeah.
I think it's interesting. It makes me think of this new, the new phrase, nesting curious, right? Like if you're like open to this idea, what you said a minute ago with about how some of the people you interviewed for the book did this before they even started the divorce process. We've been getting a lot of messages lately from people that are doing this. They don't have a word for it though. They're not calling it nesting, right? They don't know. They just don't know. They're just saying we're kind of figuring this out. They're not doing it though where they share the apartment. They're, what I'm hearing about are people who are keeping the house, but then both the husband and the wife are getting their own places. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of just come back. And I think that's because a lot of them, like when they're out of the nest, if you will, they want to feel completely like,
they want to fly.
They want to fly. They want to spread their wings. They want to do their thing in the apartment. And I have to say, I feel like that's the part that would be tough for me. If I had a different marriage and a different divorce, and if I were to do this, I feel like I wouldn't want to share the apartment with him, because I think that I'm just thinking about like dating.
And you just said they want to do their thing in the apartment. So how can you do the thing in the apartment?
Well, I mean, people do though. That's what a lot of people do. But I just feel like it would feel kind of like college, like kind of gross, like who used these sheets before me kind of thing. Was there any, I mean, not to sound like a, you know, 19-year-old here, but was there any of that weirdness going on for you, Beth?
Yeah.
I was... Beth's like sweating. I can see it now.
I think I'm blushing. But we had some rules about like, and a lot of nesters do this, like no other adults in the nest, you know, in the house with the kids, at least like for a set period of time, or we agree together before the kids meet anybody. You know, people have a lot of strong feelings, not only about their ex dating, but certainly like bring them new partner into the family home. So I think it's good to have rules about that you both agree to. We were both wanting to date. And so, I mean, we didn't talk about it, but we just had the rule of like, when you come into the apartment, you know, the sheets have been washed, the dishes are all clean. Like you really had to kind of make it like a hotel in a way, you know, like you just walk in, everything sort of in place, which is, you know, frankly, kind of a pain in the ass, especially because I was coming to the house at, you know, 7 a.m. on Wednesdays. And so I would get up like at 5 and throw the sheets in the washer and have everything cleaned up. And, you know, it probably depends on the people, but for us, we kind of needed that blank slate. Yeah. But I did love when Bill found his own apartment, and that was just my apartment. And then I really, you know, could leave my stuff around, spread out.
Well, and make it a personable yeah. space, because you can't right. put pictures up of things, right? Like that feels like that would be tough. Are there couples who nest who do kind of what I just described, where they maybe keep the marital home for the kids, but then immediately they both get their own separate places?
Yeah, for sure. I think that that's probably the most common, though a lot of people, I think because of the financial thing, a lot of people have, you know, maybe I think one couple in the book that they owned a condo before they bought their house, so they had been renting it out. And so one of them goes to the condo. And when the book was written, I don't know if it's still this way, but when the book was written, the wife would actually go and stay with family when she wasn't in the yeah. next. So some people do that or stay with friends. And so I think people, yeah, find a way to make their own, you know, space, their own time.
Right.
And then I was surprised at the number of people who do manage to both stay in the family home and just sort of keep these separate spaces, separate time, which is the stage that we are in just very recently. And so it's interesting to me because it's challenging in different right. ways, as you can imagine, nice in different ways too. But yeah, there's just a lot of things you kind of have to sort through about what space you need, how comfortable you are with the other person, even any evidence of them, you know, like there was a
yeah.
period, I think, where probably Bill, even more than myself, you know, was like, I don't want to see anything about you. Unless, you know, like, don't leave anything. It's yours. And so, you know, we're way past that, but it was necessary. You know, you do need to be moving into your own life. And I think what was nice about nesting for us, and I think for a lot of people, though, is that the kids were not, like, not really a worry. You know, I mean, they were a worry, but they weren't causing a lot of stress. It was just the divorce that was causing stress. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt really good about the kids being in the same bed every night and,
well,
same schedule.
That's ideal, of course, because I think what most people worry about more than anything else in the divorce process is the well-being of the kids. I mean, that's the hardest part for everybody. But something I want to say, clarify, you were talking about the cost of the housing situation. And I remember when you and I were chatting prior to recording, Beth, the point that you made of the apartment that you're going and getting for yourself is not an apartment that's the size to house you and the kids. So you are saving in the sense that, like, you could get a really nice studio apartment or a one bedroom apartment, which is not going to be nearly as expensive as, you know, getting something that's a three bedroom house or a four bedroom house because it's for you and the kids. So that's something to think about when we're weighing all the financial factors here.
You know, it's yeah. interesting too. I recently had a same sex couple that came, or one of the sides came to see me. And they wanted to, or they were thinking about nesting, but they had no children. And the reason that they almost wanted to nest is because they were really proud of this house that they built, for lack of a better term. They were really Wow. proud of everything about it, that they had made it this special space. There was all these outdoor features that were really great. And they just didn't think that they were going to be able to find anything similar in their budget. So they were kind of discussing nesting without children. So I don't know that it's completely something that's just related to children. There could be other motivating factors. And, you know, so it's kind of interesting that we're touching on this topic. And Beth, I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on today. I know, you know, Andrea and I joke, it's kind of a controversial subject in the divorce space. People either love it or they don't. And lawyers either are on board or they're not, or they're kind of like me where, you know, it's not one size fits all. It's specific to the couple and to the spouses, and we just do what's best for them. So I think thank you for actually writing a book on this. Thank you for actually being honest about the pros and the cons and kind of giving us a roadmap of, if you're thinking about nesting, what it could look like.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to have this opportunity, and it was fun to talk with you both. Yeah, there's a lot to keep in mind. So I hope it just gave people some, you know, thoughts about what they maybe could pursue or what might work for them. And so thank you so much for the time. I really enjoyed it.
You are so welcome. And I just want to leave by saying, guys, there's more than one way to do this. There is more than one way to get divorced. There's more than one way to protect your children through this process. If you want more information, we're going to have a direct link in the show notes to get a hold of Beth's book. Also, we'll have the link for Facebook so that you can, we'll see, Beth, are we able to put a direct link to the private group and then they can message you from there?
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Okay, yeah. So if you are nesting curious and you would like to join her private community on Facebook to learn more about this culture and lifestyle of nesting, see if it's right for you, join the group, get the book, ask questions. We'll also give you a direct link to Beth's website so that you can reach out to her directly and learn everything there is, because in this space, knowledge definitely is power. So more power to you for listening to this episode. More power to you, Beth, for opening our eyes and educating us on something that we really did not know a ton about. And it was really interesting hearing about what worked for you and your family.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
Wow, that was interesting, no-nos. Right?
Yes. Nesting no-nos and yes, nesting ho-hos. I don't know. Something. No, I was having a time.
I think the best was hashtag nesting curious.
Yeah. I don't know if one can be nesting curious and sober curious, because I feel like I would need to be, you know, not sober curious while I,
if you were nesting,
I feel like it does take a very special divorcing couple to do that.
Yeah. And my experience too is if it's not the perfect couple, there's going to be problems, and those problems are going to be big, very, very problematic. And sometimes it takes a while to unwind the issues, but she was lovely. Yeah. And the fact that her and her husband could be that, you know, adult-like and responsible and complimentary, I mean, that was great to see, because it can happen.
I want to know why they got divorced. You guys are getting along that well.
That's so true. Okay. So I have, you know, to end this episode, I had a story of a client that came to see me recently, and it was a new client interview. They were interviewing me, telling me their story, and I was interviewing them to seeing if it was going to be a good fit. And at the end, it's kind of a takeaway for our listeners. At the end of the interview is when we kind of, once I've got all the information, I kind of tell them what I think could happen in their case and what to expect. And this potential client...
Wait, you were talking to both of them?
No, just one client.
Oh, one okay. Client. Okay. You said them. Okay. Got it. Never mind. Okay.
I'm talking about when I talk to the client, yes, I tell them what could happen based upon their information, their background, et cetera, what to expect. And this client, this potential client, kept cutting me off and telling me, yeah, I know what's going to happen. I saw it on the internet. Here's what's going to happen. And I'm like, what? And, you know, they kept doing it. Maybe the second or third time I said, I got to stop you here. The internet is not where you should get all your information. And it's a cautionary tale for our listeners, because the internet is lovely and it gives you good information to an extent. But here's what it doesn't give you. It may give you the fact that in your state that a law is out there, but it's not going to tell you that this is how the judges interpret the law. This is what the judges think about that kind of behavior. This is what could happen, because you're not thinking about this other law that's out there. So I actually had to stop them and say, you know, you're either hiring me, and if we go forward, for a job to do, and you're stopping the internet, or this isn't going to work. So it was a cautionary tale about when you are thinking about things, just be careful about all the nonsense you read online. Some of it's great, but you really have got to talk to some professional that's in your area. And again, if you don't know a good professional, contact us. That's what we're here for, to give guidance and referrals if there's somebody in your area that you need.
However, you are free to stop your attorney and tell them, I know what's going to happen because I heard about it on How Not to Suck a Divorce.
Yes, exactly.
That's loud. It's kind of like, it makes me think of the patient that rolls into their doctor's office and says, no. I know what it is. I went on WebMD.
Yeah.
I can tell you, you don't even need to run the labs, doctor. Right. I know what's up.
Mm-hmm. Right? I don't need a law license. Why did I get my law license?
They can do this themselves.
They got it.
Right. And so, guys, what Morgan just said is so important. We all know that you don't go on the internet to diagnose yourself, right? You're probably not dying. And also, you don't know what's going to happen in your divorce. You can have some ideas. And yes, you could read things and think, oh, well, that kind of lines up, and it very well could. But for the 1,000,000th time, all roads lead back to hire the right attorney for your case. And then once you hire them, trust that person, please, just like you trust your doctor.
It's right. I'm not saying don't question me. I want to be questioned. I want you to know the pros and cons and why I'm thinking strategy the way I'm thinking in your case, because every case is different. Again, please don't tell me what your neighbor's case happened, because it doesn't matter. So different. Same as when you go to a doctor. I want you to question me just like you should question the doctor. But don't tell me what you found on the internet, because it doesn't make sense.
And don't do that to yourself. You're just putting yourself through more agony and stress by doing that. And you're wasting time. And also, you guys, if you're having this conversation, once you've hired an attorney, might I remind you of a cute little phrase called billable hours? You're wasting time and money by doing your diatribe to your attorney about the fact that you already know what's going to happen. You're wasting time. You're wasting money. Stop it and listen. Okay, we need to wrap this episode because I have a very hot episode of Love is Blind waiting for me, giving me a reason to keep going.
That's fair.
Guys, right? That's fair. So guys, listen to your attorney, get off the internet, listen to our show, and good night. No, we're just kidding. We know that you listen to this show for a reason, and we are so, so honored that you do. We do this show because ultimately we don't want you to suck at getting divorced.
Right. And we know that divorce is a marathon, whether you're just thinking about leaving, whether you're in the middle of it, or even if you've ended your divorce, it still can be a marathon. And it sometimes is day by day, and sometimes it's hour by hour, and that's okay.
We're here for you. We're here for you on the good days. We're here for you on the bad days. And we're here for you on those days that are so bad that you just want to click your heels together three times and hope that this whole thing is a dream. We promise you, it does not last forever. The really, really bad days are temporary, and you're going to get through this, and we will be with you the entire way. And along those lines, please remember, we have private communities for you to join. Should you feel the need to listen to these episodes in the most discreet way possible, meaning that there will be no trace of the fact that you're listening to How Not to Suck at Divorce, you are welcome to join our community over on Patreon, where for $8 a month, you get to listen to all of these episodes privately, and you get the opportunity to listen to bonus episodes that are only recorded for our Patreon audience. Should you want more community, you can hop on over to Facebook and join our private community. And there are links to our show notes to all of our groups.
Exactly. And if you like our show, please rate and review us and send us messages. You know that we love hearing from you, and we answer every one of the direct messages we receive. So remember, guys, this is tough stuff, but we're here for you. And don't forget that you've got this, and we've got you.